You're welcome to Jinsekon Radio Show, and today's discussion is going to be very, very interesting. I have my guest seated here, looking all lovely and nice, and I can say we actually have gender balance here because the women's officer made sure that everybody, whichever discussion we're going to have, wasn't just going to be one-sided. So we have two guys, including me, the host, and we also have two beautiful ladies in here. So as you can see, today we're going to discuss sexual offenders and whether they need help or punishment. And I have my guest in here who would be introducing themselves to you. And let's start from my far left.
Hi everyone, I'm Isla. I'm the women's officer here at the Students' Union. I am from County Durham, from a tiny village in the northeast of England. I'm a recent history and politics graduate, and I'm having a lot of fun being women's officer in my first full-time job. So, thanks.
Great. How about you?
Hi everybody, my name is Christine Chege. I'm from Kenya and I'm pursuing a master's degree in public policy and management.
Hi guys, hope you're having a great day. And my name is Asad. I'm studying law and first year. I'm from Pakistan.
Oh, great. So as you can see, my name is Kwame. I'm the general secretary for the Students' Union. And what we want to do here is to make sure that students from diverse cultural backgrounds have their opinion heard and they can own their own opinion and they wouldn't feel afraid airing it out. So today we're going to discuss sexual offenders, but then we really want to start this discussion by understanding exactly what sexual offenses are. So from my guests are going to give their own definitions or their own perspective on what they feel a sexual offense is. Yeah, so if you can start with our women's officer, Isla.
Yeah, sure. So I guess I see sexual offenses as covering, I mean, that's an umbrella term, I think, for a whole sort of plethora of different kinds of behaviors. So I think sexual offenses, in my opinion, can range from anything from things like catcalling, inappropriate, unwanted comments, offensive jokes, then to like inappropriate touching, groping, all that kind of stuff. And then obviously to the more serious offences like rape, for example, would obviously be the most serious sexual offence.
Great. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think for me it's very much similar to that, in terms of, you know, any form of sexual advance, you know, any form of sexual advances without the consent of the individual that activity or that you know, sort of advancement is supposed to be directed towards. So as long as there isn't that consent, then that is where, you know, you cross that line.
Kwame, I agree with Ella and Kristen, both of them. And for I just want to add some of my point of view. Like, for me, a sexual assault is like a person intentionally touches someone without their own the person's or who they're touching without their consent. So I think that's a sexual offense.
Mm.
So if you doing that intentionally, so that's what when you should be guilty. Yeah.
Okay, great. And I really liked it when you guys were giving your perspective, you didn't bring gender into the question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that is where I now want to find out that at what point do you think as a woman, you are cisgender, right?
Yeah.
So as a woman, at what point do you think it will be inappropriate for somebody to, you know, do something? Let me put it this way. At what point do you think you would call a particular act that was directed at you as a sexual offense?
I think it's difficult. I think it can depend on how a certain person action.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that are definitely, like, for example, groping and sort of catcalling. I think they come from, like, a culture of, I mean, disproportionately, these things do happen to women. like sort of a culture of ownership over women's bodies that that yeah comes from a place of power. And I think that I think it would be on the victim in a situation to determine whether or not obviously there's a line, because people can, you know, misconstrue actions and things, but I think it should always be victim focused. You know, someone might catcall and not realize it's offensive, but that doesn't make it okay.
Yeah, great. I want to come to your side. Do you think men can be sexually offended?
Of course, yes. I think this offense should not be generalized, because sometimes children, especially children, are often subjected to such offenses in their schools or sometime in some public places where they're going, and they don't even have the like proper education. They don't even have the how to like report these type of offenses, and they sometimes don't tell their parents, because the offender can be their like a relative, or it can be a close friend or someone. So they don't even have idea what's going on, but they are very disturbed. So I think it depends. Like it shouldn't be generalized, in my point of view. Like,
I mean, that's good. And then I love the fact that you talked about children.
Yeah.
But you see, Christine, you add this to it. How about adult men? You know, at what point do you think an adult man can be sexually offended?
Yeah, I mean, and I think we've already established that the line is, you know, is crossed whereby there's that unwillingness, right, from one participant, right, or where there's no consent. So yes, I think a lot of times, you know, a lot of these things being like societal constructions whereby, you know, you define masculinity by power and being assertive, then we tend to assume that no, this thing cannot happen to you, you're a man, or you know, we tend to assume that, you know, these things are really just specific to women. But I have had male friends who've sort of, you know, talked about how they were inappropriately touched by a woman, or sometimes by also other men. So it's not something that is gender specific, but I think the fact that there's that notion that, oh no, this is something that just happens to women, or this is something that does not happen to men, then also now that also adds on to the stigma, so that we have male victims that are not willing to come forward,
yes,
because of the stigma that's associated. Like, you know, what do you mean a woman touched you inappropriately and you did not enjoy it, right? And something will think that this must be something wrong with you,
for sure.
Or you know, so those are the issues now that just makes this such a complex issue. But there are instances, of course, where men also are unwilling to participate.
So I mean, as Ayla, I know that you want to add your voice to it, but you know, like in addition to it, what do you think can be done to make men report some of these issues and still feel that it's okay to?
Yeah, I mean, totally agree with both of you. I think it absolutely is an issue that can affect anyone of any gender completely. I think it does disproportionately affect women. However, I think that we need to break down the stigma around it. You know, it shouldn't be the victims that feel like they can't come forward. It should be the victims that, you know, can speak about their experiences. And I think a place to start would be, or maybe not a place to start, but somewhere to go along the way, would be changing the legal definition of rape.
Good.
I know in the United Kingdom, at least, or England and Wales, rape is penetration with a penis. So anyone, like a cis woman or anyone with a vagina, can't rape anybody, which is obviously very archaic and ridiculous. So I think that would be, you know, somewhere to go. But again, just like breaking down the stigma and talking about it more, I think is really important.
I think you just said something that I think every man is going to feel okay right now. Because usually when you're talking about this, you know, it becomes a bit more one-sided. But I love the fact that you're a women's officer, but you're actually hitting on the fact that, like, even constitutionally, things need to change and be made gender neutral when it comes to rape. Yeah. And actually, we have some statistics here where they surveyed 4.5 million males in the people in the US, and then 43 males, and 43% were saying that they were actually forced to penetrate a woman, but they found it very difficult to actually talk about it, because like you said, the whole stigma around it makes it difficult, because it's like people feel, as a man, can you be raped? As a man, can you be sexually assaulted? Yeah. And all that, yes. That kind of thing. So let's now move on to the substantive issue, which is saying that do those who offend, now that we have agreed that we don't have to bring gender into question, those who have offend, are they people? So let me put the question this way. Why do you think somebody will sexually assault the other? So let's start it from that angle. What could be some of the reasons why people do what they do, you know, that we don't like?
I mean, yeah, I'm happy to take the lead on this one. I think there are various issues. Some studies have shown that, again, that, you know, people who commit these sexual offenses are either trying to assert themselves, right? Again, right, masculinity, you know, saying this in the case of men, you know, power, right? So you're trying to assert yourself. There's also, you know, I also saw one study that just talked about issues to do with maybe you have like some significant anger towards a specific gender, say, and these are like all childhood issues and childhood traumas. And so now you're using that to sort of maybe degrade the gender that, you know, you felt, you know, or, you know, has traumatized you.
Yeah.
You are also using, you know, again, right, we're defining sexuality in terms of power, right? So again, right, that assertion comes in place. And sometimes it's also just, you know, disorders. And I'm sure, like, you know, there are also like other like childhood traumas and also issues, you know, in terms of, say, pedophilia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're sexually aroused, you know, by maybe like prepubescent bodies, right? And it could be either women who are aroused by like prepubescent boys, or, you know, and the men for girls as well. And I think, you know, ultimately rapists are not born rapists, right?
Yeah.
You are constructed by like the social culture attitudes that that people have, and so the fact that you want to assert this identity, you know, then hence it sort of motivates that violence. Mm-hmm. So it's quite multifaceted.
Great. Ayla.
I mean, I totally agree. I think there's some things that sort of statistically have proven to, I don't know whether cause, but there's a strong correlation between, for example, people who sexually abuse people as adults have often been abused themselves as children.
Mm-hmm.
I think mental illness does often play into it. And then again, I think at all levels, there's sometimes like a power dynamic at play and a sort of assumption of control over the victim's body, an assumption of ownership over the victim, in sort of like sexual offences, I guess, take away their agency.
So Asad.
I was reading an interrogation report from police. Like, they were interrogating a sexual offender, and I was quite shocked about the views he has about such things. Like, he said that, "I love being above the law. I love being sexual offender, and I love speaking to schoolgirls." So I think, it's something to do with the your mental health. They're not, maybe they have some problems mentally. Or I agree with Kristen that maybe they in some part of their life they were subjected to such activities. So they are doing in a way to take a revenge or something.
Oh, good. So now we're also talking about sexual offenses, not just being, let's say, you know, going to penetrate somebody, yeah. but also being touching people yeah. inappropriately. And so let's take you, Ayla. Yeah. How would you feel when you just touched another guy unintentionally, like you didn't mean to be this mm-hmm. and you are being sanctioned yeah. for that, and it's like we are not willing to understand why what you did was unintentional mm. because, like you said initially, it's still not an excuse, you know.
Yeah.
So how should we handle this?
I think there's a difference between, for example, like accidentally brushing past someone and they think you've sort of like intentionally grabbed them or something, and sort of the context in which I meant it before was, for example, I've had it in the past where I've been in a nightclub and a guy has sort of grabbed me inappropriately, and I think he had every intention of doing that, but I don't think he realizes the effect that that has on the person who you're doing it to. There's a difference between like accidentally brushing past someone and intentionally grabbing them, and I think in the case of accidentally rubbing past someone, you know, that happens. But when you have grabbed someone and you maybe don't realize that that's a problem, I think it's really important that we sort of confront the people who do this, and, you know, not necessarily, you know, for like sort of at lower level stuff, it's like have conversations about why that's a problem. And why it's a problem to like assume that you can just touch someone else's body without their consent.
Juanme, I just want to add something. Like, I'm getting the point where you what you're trying to make. Like, back home, we also experience such things, like on public places. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't sometimes. I have seen that people they don't have any intention to touch someone. But the other person just exaggerated, and it led to a chaos, and it was really painful to see. Like you don't even know that person, but you were like, I was sitting behind that person, and I can clearly see that he don't have any intention. He accidentally did that, but it was like he led to a chaos, and it also like end up. Having like he was I think he was beaten by some people who were around because he accidentally did that. But I think you should think twice before you like before you report such things, because sometimes it can hurt someone, or sometimes it can lead to a chaos. So, yeah.
So I think the issue about how your intentions are only understandable to just you are the only one that understands your own intentions, and how the other person is supposed to understand that you really didn't mean it becomes the question. Yeah, I think, Christine, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, true, there are cases where maybe, you know, as by the example that you've used, And I think sometimes some of these false reports sort of tend to overshadow the actual prevalence of some of these issues. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing some research that was done in the US, and it say that just 2 out of 8 of all reported rapes are actually found to be false. Right. Mm-hmm. And what, so like, that's a really small number, right? No, I'm not saying that that's right. Of course, it's wrong, but still, right? There are 90 or even more percent of those cases that are actually true. And then what's even worse was that only 68% of reported rape occurrences, like, no, let me rephrase that. There's only just 68%, I think, of all rapes are actually reported, right?
Okay.
So it means that there's a huge number that's actually not reported. And even out of all these that are reported, I believe it was 60% of those episodes actually end up in a prison sentence, right? So, and this just goes to show that, yes, there are instances where there are actually some false reports, but at the same time, you know, it's still a small number that it shouldn't take away from the conversation of these issues actually happening.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ayla, you wanted to ask something?
I think I was just going to say, I think that there's unintentional and sort of like not knowing that something's a problem. And I think if people are doing things like sexual offences, like groping or, you know, rape or anything really, and they don't realise that that's wrong, then I think that's a question of like education and, you know, like teaching someone that that's not like mm-hmm. that's absolutely not tolerable at all.
Yeah. And, you know, the other question I also want to ask is, can we say that sexual offences, they're an act that a particular country can define as sexual offences can be different country by country? Because then we are looking at culture, where maybe back home I can easily, you know, put my hands around you know, like another woman. I can do certain things that when you come to, let's say, the West, it looks a bit more different. I don't know whether sexual offenses can be in contest, the act, you know. Yeah, so
I don't think so. I think look, yes, it is true that there are some cultures that, you know, you need to keep your distance, whereas there are some other cultures that are much more free and, you know, and all that. But I think sometimes also there is an element of the victims themselves do not know that this is not appropriate, right? Right. So, for example, you know, I've been in instances where I'm from Kenya, like back home, whereby, you know, you're, you know, amongst colleagues and somebody's making some really inappropriate comments about somebody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe mostly, let me just say, like, you know, it's a girl and the guy's making inappropriate comments. And, you know, the person may, laugh it off and you're like, oh, you know, this guy is so silly.
Yeah.
But it's still inappropriate. Simple, right?
Yeah.
And it could just be because this girl just simply doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, it's like asking a victim of something else, oh, but it's such a dicey issue. It's like, I don't know what other example I can use, but it's like, you know, maybe for example, say like you have like a child that's going through like child labor, you know, and you are saying, hey, look, but then, you know, it's this country and this sort of happens, but it's wrong. Like, period. Regardless of the context, regardless of, and the thing is that it's because a lot of this societal sort of what is accepted is mm-hmm. not defined by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, majority of the societies mm-hmm. are much, they have much more male dominance.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who's defining what's right and what's wrong is the man. And so as long as there is, in the victim is also not part of like defining the status quo, then ultimately, you know, they may not know any better. It's just that they grew up in a society where that was accepted.
Mm.
It still doesn't make it right.
So the next question is going to be that then should sexual offense be defined by the victim or it needs to be predefined elsewhere so that regardless of whether the victim feels it is or it is not, sanctions and other things can apply.
I think
the
boundaries should be defined by the law, because it would be problematic if it will be defined by the victim itself. For example, for everyone knows that for some serious cases like rape, the laws are more or less similar across the world, and they are very severe punishments for that. For like, you can get a lifetime imprisonment, or in some countries you can get a chemical castration, which reduces the sexual activity. You wouldn't be able to have sex again. So that's something more or less similar in countries, but for the minor assaults, there should be some boundaries, because I have seen in my country that on this particular thing, women has an advantage. Like, even they report a false, if they have a false report, they had an advantage, and you will be end up getting to a jail or something, and get maybe you end up having 1 or 2 years imprisonment for just like kissing someone or holding a hand or something like that. It's really severe in back home.
And I think that is my issue, you know.
Yeah.
The issue where even though when we talk about sexual offenses, where it needs to be defined in the law. So the question is exactly what should be written in the law. You know, so for example, we've talked about rape. I think rape is just there. What are some of the other acts that you think can be stated in the law that wouldn't lose contest?
I think in addition to your previous question, in terms of should it be defined by, you know, in the law, the victims and all that, I think such things should be very progressive in terms of how we are defining them, mm-hmm. right? So say in the case of, say like country A, whereby, you know, it was only defined as, an, you know, in terms of the women being the victims. Now mm-hmm. we've realized that, hey, look, times are changing. And, you know, you also have men who are victims. So can we also define that? So I think the solution to that is it being very progressive in terms of now we have, you know, like if say it was like 50 years ago, maybe there was no internet and so there was no pornography, right? Mm-hmm. Well, of course there was, but like, you know, let's just say this hypothetically, that now we are realizing, oh wait, this child pornography now, it has to be very progressive in terms of making sure we are including all of these emerging issues that we are seeing. Mm-hmm. And hence now an opportunity to also add things like catcalling and, you know, groping in public, you know, in any space. So I think we'd be able then to tackle that issue of like the definition.
Because like Ayla, for example, if we put in the constitution that inappropriate touching, okay, it's a sexual offense and then it's punishable by law. And then you see the inappropriate touching now is going to be defined by the victim. Okay,
yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it's supposed to be the individual affected that will say I was inappropriately touched, right?
Yeah.
Good. So when it happens that way, isn't it going to make, isn't it going to allow the law put 100%, you know, advantage in the hands of the one that is doing the definition?
It's tricky. I mean, I guess definitely there should be some definitions within the law, but I guess as Christine was saying, I think the important thing is that it's adaptable and like can change with the time. So for example, like that was a really good example about pornography, and now we've got like revenge porn becoming a
mm-hmm,
thing
mm-hmm.
and upskirting. I don't know if you were aware of that. So basically recently a woman like started a campaign because at a festival she'd been wearing a skirt and someone had taken their phone, put it between her legs and like taken a photo. You know, like we've got to be able to sort of change with those times, and if we had a legal system where the law could never change, then, you know, we'd mm-hmm. be stuck with these outdated definitions of, for example, rape, and there would be no mm-hmm. Justice, in inverted commas, for people who, you know, make revenge porn and put mm-hmm. it online and mm-hmm. everything like that. Yeah.
Well, that was a very good example
Thank
you just
you.
Brought, because like I have never heard of that before, but I know men do.
It shouldn't happen.
I know, but how about somebody admiring another person? To what extent would admiring another person be a sexual offense?
I mean, admiration is of course absolutely fine. I think, you know, when it becomes obsessive and when it becomes like, for example, stalking,
mm-hmm.
then that's clearly an offense. But then again, it's really difficult because I think it is very much case by case, and every instance is different. But then there are these definite things which are absolutely like not okay. For example, like, you know, like following someone home and watching them all the time mm-hmm. and stuff. Yeah, it's tricky. It is.
Yeah. Asad, you're a guy.
Yeah.
You know, to what extent would you admire a lady? And I'm thinking the two of them are going to tell you whether it would be a sexual offense to them or not.
I just want to say that for just answering the previous question, I want to say you were saying that how we can criminalize these sexual offenses, but I must add that you can't you wouldn't be able to show some evidential have some difficulties showing the evidence,
mm-hmm.
and then there is a lot of gray area, like how you like say that someone is sexually assaulting you, and then you will be having some problems. Like if you start criminalizing everything, so people would be less concerned about that thing. And answering you this question, like how should I admire someone? Maybe I think today we all of us are using social media, so we don't need to drop her off, like follow her back to his home, or everything. We don't need to do that. So we can just follow them on Facebook or social media. Or if you're admiring someone, it looks in a good sense. You can pass some good comments, so maybe they can react to it.
I think you just raised another good point that I think a lot of people haven't thought about. So like you said, maybe previously social media wasn't there, so I'll be looking at you and chasing you to your house, just looking at you.
Yeah.
But now I'm actually following you on social media, dress you wear, I'm like, oh my God, it's so nice. And so if you see me liking every single picture you post and writing nice comment about it, at what point would you think, this is just...
It's tricky. And I guess, I don't know, something that just came into my mind when you were talking just then about admiring people and things. And how should you admire people? I guess the simple answer would be, how would you want to be admired yourself? Would you want to be persistently, targeted, persistently commented on? And would you to actually be spoken to in a kind,
people
respectfully,
yeah.
Respect people when you admire them. And if your admirations are not reciprocated and the person says that, then it's no and stop. Basically.
Good.
I think you just if you grab the attention of someone and he's not interested, and I think you should stop then.
Yeah.
You should stop disturbing them, and
yeah.
that will be if you go on, so that would be definitely a sexual offense.
But you know what when it comes to relationship,
yep.
and the sort of narrative that have been created that when it comes to a woman, a man should pursue. When you're told that you're supposed to pursue and be persistent before you can get the woman's attention, because I think the 10% part of it that makes it true, I'm just saying 10% part, is the fact that I just saw you. You can't easily, I am the one that have interest in you. So you wouldn't easily at that point have, it looks like I'm supposed to do something to make you, So I think it is in that process of doing something, letting you know that I really admire you.
Yeah. And then that's fine. Of course you can tell people you admire them, and sometimes that's nice to hear. Sometimes people don't want to hear it, and I think just if you like someone, you will respect them if they say no.
Yeah.
If they say no, sorry, I don't feel the same way, but nice to meet you.
Yeah. don't annoy them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
Start, don't annoy them if they're not interested. So that's it. Full stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. So I think we've had a very good contest
towards
sexual. And I think we've really brought a lot of things out right now. I literally forgot that you can actually chase a lady on Facebook. I think ladies also chase some of the guys on Facebook too,
Most of the people do. They do in a way. They follow them on each and every social media, Facebook, Insta, and everything. They know each and everything. Even you don't know that much about yourself.
Yeah.
How much they know you. So
Oh, cool. So now we have context as to what sexual offenses are and the different types of the offenses. So let's usually bring those different forms of offenses into the help and the punishment argument that we are going to have. So now, like we said, David Cameron in 2016 talked about the fact that 46% of prisoners would always reoffend.
Yeah.
You know, so because if it talks about 46, then it means that we actually have 53. Now, I just want to go back to what Christine was saying, that always not just using some aspect of the statistics to say that, hey, okay, but then also look at the other side as well. So it means we're going to have 54% of people who don't reoffend. So it means there's an issue with punishment being effective. There is an issue with help also being effective. So the question is, do you really think sexual offenders need help? And which of the forms of sexual offenses do you think the perpetrators actually need help? And which one do you think they actually need punishment? Yeah, so maybe start with Ayla.
I mean, this is such a big question, isn't it? And we can so easily bring it out to all types of crime.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the 46% reoffending rate comes from. That's from all prisoners, right? And
I think
there's a tendency in these sorts of discussions to conflate punishment and consequences for actions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess in the United Kingdom, prison is a punishment, or you get a fine, or you get, you know, community service or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, throughout history and in some places in the world still today, then it's like you get violent punishments. The death penalty still exists.
Yeah.
And things. So firstly, I think it's a question of what is punishment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, is our intention behind what we perceive as punishment actually just to rehabilitate? Because I think that's what we would all hope.
Yeah.
And I don't think this happens, and I think prisons are not necessarily the way to go about this, but I think that from those statistics you gave us, mm-hmm. the punishment side of things doesn't seem to work.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we find a way of rehabilitating that does work?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily know the answer to that. Yeah, I would say punishment as the sole consequence for sexual offences is not the correct way.
The correct way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Christian. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think. Yeah, this is a really dicey one, really, because I think at the end of the day, it's also a really individual. It's a case by case basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's I actually don't even have, the one solution. Because it's such a dicey word. I think I'll let the lawyer. The lawyer tell us.
I think for severe cases like rape, there should be a punishment, because you have to set an example for others so they don't follow the same thing. So I think it's a good thing, there should be some punishments. But for the cases, if you say if you can feel that there is a mental element, if there is a mental element involved, the person is, you feel the person is mentally sick, or he's not mentally so well, so I think there should be some counseling should be given to him or her,
mm-hmm.
so maybe they can get a better person in future.
Cool. But so let's, now mm-hmm. let's pick some of the offenses, let's pick some of the offenses and just discuss how punishment or help can help reduce it. Because I think, like you were saying, Ayla, that the whole idea is to just stop people from doing that.
Yeah.
That's the whole ambition. And I'm pretty sure your project, the Reclaim the Night, is actually part of it. I'm pretty sure you'll talk about it later on.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but let's pick some of the forms, especially those that are more prevalent among students, because we are students. Yes, let's talk about some of those ones and see whether you think help or punishment, a combination of both, could help.
I think it's so difficult because, we think about rape and we think about this you know, it's horrendous and awful and no one should have to go through it. And when we think about people like, for example, Harvey Weinstein, when I think about, like in my opinion, it's very uncomfortable for me to say, like, he shouldn't be punished, because mm-hmm. I think he should. He's like a repeat, you know, offender. But then there's so much nuance to it, and sort of drawing on my own experience, actually, like, rape isn't always, you know, like how we perceive it, like on a dark street at night. And in fact, the vast majority of cases, especially among students, are someone they know, you know, like, and I don't know, like, is, I would never want to say that there shouldn't be consequences mm-hmm. for the actions mm-hmm. and there shouldn't be consequences for rape. There absolutely should, because, you know, it's a horrible thing and no one should have to deal with that. But to say punishment is the primary objective of those consequences, I think, is problematic. And I think it should be a case of education and rehabilitation. And maybe in, I don't know, maybe in some cases mm. have punishment, but still the word, I think the word punishment,
the word,
is,
yeah.
it really doesn't sit well with me. I think we need to move away from that and towards rehabilitation in whatever form that might take. But then obviously victims, you know, it can be like a sense of like emotional closure to some people, at least, to know that the perpetrator has been punished.
Yeah.
But then I don't know, is that justice? Do we need to like change the culture of what we perceive to be justice
mm-hmm.
Away from like the focus on punishment?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's very, very difficult.
But you've made a very fair point there. Yeah. Mm. So, Christine?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. This is a really difficult sort of way to look at like this whole concept is quite difficult. I mean, I was just thinking right now, I think ultimately the issue is even, you know, like, do we then, when you're punishing and when you're rehabilitating, are you addressing the root cause?
Exactly. Mm.
Right?
Exactly.
Are we addressing the yeah. root cause? So is therapy the option? And now again, I was even thinking, how do we identify these at like at the initial phase? Is it, you know, maybe like being able to say if you're going to commit, like I'm looking at it in terms of like a spectrum of like sexual assault, you know, activities. And is it that, or maybe like making sure that we are reporting these minor crimes, because then ultimately the person who will catcall here and like, you know, sort of like have like an inappropriate advancement will potentially be that person now who will end up on like the higher spectrum of, you know, actually committing, say, rape,
yeah.
right? So the fact that we're not even reporting, like majority of the cases, again, are not reported. Like there's a whole misconception, as you said, that,
yeah.
you know, a lot of people think that, oh, rape, you know, happens in like all these dark alleys, but it's actually mm-hmm. happening in our own homes and like
yeah.
even people that we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, then we are not reporting all of these cases. But I just sort of thought about, in terms of like the actual approach to it, maybe having a spectrum whereby from the minor offenses to all of these, and making sure that, I don't know, like just developing a culture of making sure people are reporting these minor issues, because mm-hmm. then you can sort of approach that, you know, maybe that person who will commit that minor, you know, issue will then be sort of go through the therapy and like the rehabilitation mm-hmm. process, minor, say, the punishment, where else somebody who commits like more of the bigger crime actually now goes to jail mm. and all that. But again, it's a really, it's a dicey topic.
In my mind, what I was thinking was mm-hmm. that, okay, so I was thinking mm-hmm. was that for us to be able to apply punishment, it means it should stop the person, right?
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
it should serve as a deterrent.
Yeah.
Help to is supposed to help the person, like, you know, stop doing that.
Mm.
So in my mind, I was like, okay, can we find a way of studying each individual to know exactly what yeah. they don't like, you know, what that person would die than do, so that that becomes the person's punishment. So, for example, mm-hmm. If you're a guy and you feel so shy to let people see you sweeping the streets,
yeah,
and now that it's like you would die than do that work, then maybe the person that person happens to commit a sexual offense, then you're like, okay, you are going to the street to go and sweep.
I got him some community services or something.
Yeah, but then this time, knowing that the person hates to do that thing and wouldn't do that at all cost. So if the person is forced as a punishment by law to do that, do you think such things are going to work, or you feel like in the next 3 months it's just going to get used to it?
How practical is that?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like,
yeah.
I know.
To be honest, like, and this is me, I'm not going to be politically correct, but yeah. I think if you commit rape, surely the worst kind of punishment should be sort of imposed onto you. I don't know if that's the correct, like, you know, phrase, you know, because you're using somebody's body as a weapon. Like, it is the most despicable of act, you know, of yeah. act. And again, right, as Allah said, is that, does that really do anything to the victim, you know, right? See, the fact that, yeah, it's, you know, even if you go through the, you know, death penalty, like, does that do anything? But maybe it's like a good road to recovery for that person, seeing that somebody was actually held.
Yeah, and I think Ayla wants to add something, but let me just ask you this question. I think it will help you answer it a bit more widely. Yeah. So let's say somebody touches someone else inappropriately.
Yeah.
That is an offense. What mm-hmm. should be done to this person?
Again, I think it's really difficult, and I think it can often be on a case by case basis.
Yeah.
Really.
Let's take it like this case, the person has touched inappropriately and it's been agreed it's inappropriate.
Mm.
What would be the sanction? Let me not say something, because you're talking about help and punishment. So exactly what would you want us to do to this person? This time as a victim, then Christine will come in as somebody who is not the victim and also wants to make sure this thing doesn't happen again.
I think it's so hard to be objective, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that...
So I want you to be in the shoes of the victim. So
yeah,
whether objective
and I
or
totally
subjective,
have been
yeah.
in that position multiple yeah. times, unfortunately.
Yeah. What would you wish?
I mean, what I wish mm-hmm. is that the culture that allows this sort of thing to happen didn't
mm-hmm.
exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wish. Mm-hmm. I wish we could take that away. So I guess what I would like in that situation, and this
yeah.
is just me, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't
mm-hmm.
speak to anyone
yeah.
else's experience.
Yeah.
Education and sort of an acknowledgement from the perpetrator that that was
mm-hmm.
inappropriate, and
okay.
that hurt me.
Okay.
I guess acknowledgement, and
mm-hmm.
and this is where we come to like restorative justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like teaching people that something mm-hmm. they do is wrong, and then
mm-hmm.
they're more likely to not do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's much more effective than
mm-hmm.
just punishment. You know, you've done something wrong, get punished.
Mm-hmm.
People, I mean, as we've seen from those statistics, they
mm-hmm.
just, you know, do it again.
No, I think what you just said is very powerful. Like, just I want you to acknowledge that what
yeah.
you just did was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's really, really, really powerful.
Yeah.
It's more than being put to prison.
Yeah, completely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Obviously, it gets more difficult in more serious offences.
Mm.
But I think starting from that perspective of
yeah.
like trying to teach and trying to get people to acknowledge that this sort of behaviour is not okay...
Mm.
Starting there, and then sort of, if that's not possible, then think
mm-hmm.
about where we
yeah.
where we go from there.
Yeah. So, Christine. So,
yeah.
let's say you are the one that actually witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
Witnessed. What would have been? What you recommend?
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with her. In terms of that acknowledgement, and also just like just changing the fact that
mm-hmm.
somebody feels that that is okay.
So this time I'm talking about. You've not heard the victim say this, like you've
right.
seen the victim,
seen
yeah, and you are trying to be, let's say, an active bystander, should I put it that
yeah.
way?
Right.
Yeah, so what would you do in that situation?
No, because of course you call it out, right? You have to speak up, because the culture of not speaking up also is what sort of continues to perpetuate this culture. So most importantly is that you speak out and say, hey, look, that was inappropriate. This is what you should do. You should apologize to this person, right? So that is really the most important thing, the speaking out part.
It's speaking out part.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So I thought you are supposed to be, let's say, the lawyer.
Okay.
You know, and then you are the one that is defending the defendant, because this time round the victim will be the plaintiff, right?
Right.
Okay, you are the one defending the defendant. So you being a lawyer defending someone who has sexually assaulted somebody.
Yeah.
Actually, that's the reason why I always have issues with lawyers, when you actually have two lawyers, one at the other side, one at the other side, trying to, you know, do the defense. Exactly. What would you do in this situation, and a defender comes and pick you as a lawyer and says, this is what I have done, and save me?
Basically, I think the issues would be there will be less issues to the defender, because there is no such evidence due to evidential difficulties. So the proceedings would be much difficult. And then the... if we go for the some severe punishments, for example, like if you want him to get some imprisonment or something like that, so who will decide that is it a sexual offense, and to what extent that harmed you? Or to what extent it would be punished? Because for the severe offenses like rape, it's much clearer. Like you harm someone, you use their body, and you did it intentionally or some. But there in these type of cases, like minor assaults, so there is a lot of gray area. Mm-hmm. So maybe the defendant has advantage.
Oh.
Of doubt,
cool. So I think the law now makes it complex, right?
Yeah,
I think the law becomes like the devil's advocate, because sometimes they just want to make sure the plaintiff or the victim is not kind of aggravating the issue unnecessarily, I think. So now you next semester, I think, we'll be having Reclaim the Night,
which
has some sort of link with what we are discussing. So can you give us a background to that?
Yeah, so, of course, basically, Reclaim the Night started in Leeds in, I believe, I might get the decade wrong, but I think it was the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a serial killer called Peter Sutcliffe had been murdering women, and... one of the responses by the authorities to this was telling women not to go outside after a certain time at night, right? Which, you know, as you can imagine, isn't possible. You know, people have to work.
Yeah.
Why were the women being the ones that had to adjust their behavior,
right,
rather than
the guys?
You know,
yeah.
It's restrictive.
This serial killer is restricting the women. So, yeah, this march started in Leeds, reclaiming the night and saying, no, this is our night, basically.
Yeah.
And it's kind of spread across the country since then, because I think, you know, everyone, definitely myself and every, you know, all my friends really, don't want to walk home at night, especially in student-y areas like Fallowfield, Rush Home, because they're scared of crime, because factually there are high crime rates. So Reclaim the Night is basically sort of like taking back the night and standing up for the people who feel vulnerable at night. And it's a really empowering, awesome march. But this year I'm hoping, as well as a march, it can be like a whole campaign and like raising awareness about things like crime and sexual assault and misconduct and... yeah, basically. I think last year there were 3,500 people on the march, which is very large number of people, as you
I
can
imagine.
I saw
the pictures.
Yeah, yeah, and videos and everything. And it's a whole really like powerful event that we do. So I'm very much looking forward to...
Oh, great. And I think that it's also like a political statement to the city council that, like, put a lot of police on the streets, like put street lights there, like also educate men and who men and women that have been assaulting each other on the streets, so that do we actually even need the police to be on the street? Like, you know,
I mean, that's
just
that's
allow
whole...
people to be. Allow people to be, and that's it. So we are left with some 4 minutes for us to close. So the next thing is that, what do we all agree? I think from the discussion that we've had, we've seen how difficult it is to say whether they need help or punishment. But I think we all agree that people need some sort of help, because the advice that you gave, that the person just acknowledging.
Rehabilitation, right?
I think it's a big help that... And it's self alone is even a punishment, because to most guys, our ego makes it so difficult for us to say. So if you're able to get the person saying that, it's like, yeah, you've punished them enough. The person's just, it's going to be hard for the person to repeat that, which I think. So what advice do you just have for both genders? Especially, yeah,
as
those who are involved in this. So maybe
as victims
1 minute.
Or perpetrators? Or?
Victims and perpetrators, the two. Advice for both of them. So that is what the three of you all give.
I mean, for victims, I would say take care of yourself first. If you feel like you can come forward, do that. But you don't have to. For the wider world, I would say, like, let's talk about this and think about how we can... how we can address this. And I think conversations, like really valuable conversations, and saying what you think and not being afraid to speak is really, really important. And let's break down those barriers. And, you know, for perpetrators, or just don't do it.
And I guess it validates our Speak Up, Stand Up campaign that we have, and the Active Bystander campaign. Christine, what advice do you have?
I saw a TED talk today, and it was talking about an Indonesian, I think it was an ethnic group, whereby masculinity is not defined by, you know, this machoism and strength and all that. And so a lot of these, and they have very low cases of like sexual assault, just because, right, there isn't that, you know, like the fact that we have like a president, you know, talking about, or, you know, grabbing women by their private parts, and somehow, you know, that individual gets elected, right? That just sort of goes to show how flawed our understanding of, you know, of sexuality and all that is, right? And so we need to stop this social construction of, you know, of saying this is how men should behave and this is how women should behave. So that needs to stop, because we are perpetuating this.
Yeah, so Asad, you have 1 minute.
Yeah, just capping and capping it all. So I would like to say to the victims, like, report it, look for help, and for the offenders, get a counseling or socialize so you can be a better person.
Great. So I think we really discussed, I never thought that we would rather go into depth like we've done right now. I thank you all, my guests, Ayla, Christine, Asad, for coming here to share your perspective on this. And I think to the one that offends, just know that it's an offense. You're offending somebody. Just don't do it, or try to find out from the other person, if I hug you, is it going to offend you? Like, find out from the person, and, you know, just make sure. But what we are talking about is that we will provide you help if you do it. We will provide you a badge just that you wouldn't like the help, you know, so just don't do it. Yeah, so it's been Kwame, and it's been my guest here.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank you, Kwame. Thanks for inviting.
Yeah, so we look forward to you being with us next week to also have another wonderful discussion. My name is Kwame. I'm the General Secretary for the Students' Union. And then we just want to give you all the platform to air your voice and your opinions on social issues. So until we meet next week, thank you and bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.